Welcome for our first session of Bridging the Gap, Practical Support for Parents of Grown Sons and Daughters with Celine Eichen. So Celine is a certified trainer with the Center for Nonviolent Communication, and she also has a master in education. One thing that I want to share about Celine is she enjoys tying NVC with mindfulness practice and interpersonal neurobiology. And Celine is the mother of two adult sons. And so she will be able to help us understand and make sense of the relationship between parents and adult children, not only because of all her studies, but also because of her personal experience.
Welcome, everybody. I'm very happy to be with you today. I've been preparing for this moment, so I'm excited that it's finally here. So today I've planned that we'll get to know about the issues that we're all dealing with in our relationships with our grown sons and daughters, and we'll have a chance to receive some empathy and to practice giving empathy. And then after that, I'm going to share with you some of the information that I have been researching about the social and psychological factors that are affecting families today and that are unprecedented in U.S. history. And I think that they can give us a relief sometimes and a greater perspective, some more clarity. But before we get started, I wanted to do a few things. I first want to dedicate this class to my two sons, and I never thought I'd be saying them, and kind of have gratitude for all the trouble they caused in my life, because without that, I wouldn't be where I am now. And so I'm bowing to them. They have no idea I would do this, but it's important for me to acknowledge what I've learned and the benefit of having survived those difficult times. And, you know, they come around. I also want to acknowledge that today is Rosh Hashanah, and it's a high holiday in the New Year in the Jewish tradition. And one of the important practices of Rosh Hashanah is forgiveness, which I think is apt for our work, what we're doing, and our relationship with ourselves and our relationship with our children. So right now, I'm going to jump into our course. So we're going to be going into small groups to share what it is that has brought us to this call. We're going to be giving each other empathy. And for those of you who may not have as much experience and who maybe didn't get a chance to read the document I wrote about empathy, I'm just going to do a little review reminder. I started with a definition of empathy that I love that Sura Hart wrote. She is the author of The Compassionate Classroom and Compassionate Parenting, and also the creator of the No Fault Game. And she defines it this way. Empathy is the intention to connect with the feelings and needs of another. It is the gift of our presence. Without judgment, analysis, suggestions, stories, or any motivation to fix the other person. And I like that kind of non-doing, simply the presence and the resisting any urge to give advice and simply being present. Not wanting to be right and not trying to get the person to have some huge insight. It's a lot of trust and respect in giving empathy. You will be in groups of three, and you will choose one person to be the scribe, and this person will track the issues that are raised. For example, if somebody says, I feel desperate because my daughter won't speak to me and I just know she's in trouble. And then the other person gives some empathy, and the scribe writes down worry, and lack of contact. And the person who gives empathy says something like, sounds like you're pretty worried because you really care and you would like to be able to support your daughter. And then you go to the next person. The other part of the exercise is that I'd like to gather together a list of all the issues that come up. And then after the exercise, we will debrief it and we will also get the person who wrote down the issues for each group to share them with the whole group so that we see what it is that we are holding together. I'd like to hear from a few of you, maybe three people, if you'd like to share how it was for you to experience speaking in your small group and being listened to and then listening to the other parents share. Any surprises, any learning that happened for you?
Enjoy doing myself. I do see two hands.
My situation, we have a 25-year-old son who has been away at college and he graduated and he just moved back with us. He's only going to be here a short time. The difficulty I have is in a certain situation when he gets triggered or upset, he talks to me in a very loud, what I consider angry voice, and there's some blaming that I'm hearing, and I get really very scared and almost like shocked out of my body. It feels like I just left. And what I got, there was such shared reality, particularly with two other women in my group, that they also have had similar experiences of that feeling of feeling so scared. So just having that shared reality helps me to kind of relax to know that my situation isn't so unusual. Thanks.
I think this is one of the things that's so valuable about getting together as parents. And I heard your understanding of your son that he is triggered or upset.
Uh-huh.
And I'm guessing that he doesn't have the awareness of the power, the strength of his being. Because I know my son does the same thing. And I think he doesn't realize how much energy and force he has. And at that moment, certainly, it's not a time to say anything. I just have to remind myself he's not aware of how strong he's coming across. And then get the empathy that you're getting from other people.
Yeah, that really makes sense because after the situation happens, like you said, he's not aware. He's saying, you know, I sounded maybe a little annoyed. He's not connected to the power.
Yeah, last time I had an exchange with my older son, something like that happened, and I was so shaken. I was so upset that I actually went through a red light when I went driving, like a half hour later. And when we brought it up a little bit, he says, well, I'm letting go of last week, and I hope you're letting go of it, too. And I didn't tell him, you know, I thought, he doesn't understand, and I'm not mommy anymore, so it's not like I've got to teach him. To take care of myself.
Right. Thank
you. Thank you for bringing that up.
I get shared reality. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I realized as I was sharing, I have 7 children and 12 grandchildren, and I actually now have 3 great grandchildren. And I probably was more comfortable sharing with this little group what I'm feeling and what's happening in my life than I have ever been able to talk about it before. And it was interesting because I sort of thought I knew where I was, and it was so much easier to find where I am and what I'm feeling here. You know, I don't know whether I've ever been able to tell anybody exactly what's happening until today. So I found that extremely interesting and also very comforting that I feel safe. And the other thing I will share is that since I've been working with NVC, because my kids, I just haven't seen much of them for a long time. There's a divorce 25 years ago, and they took sides, and it wasn't my side. I have had to give myself a great deal of empathy over the last couple of years because I really blamed myself for a lot and felt very responsible. I still feel somewhat guilty. Two of my daughters, one is in her second marriage and getting ready to leave it, and the other one has been living alone now with her little girl for quite a few years. The guilt I feel is about somehow the relationship they lived in with their father and I has not helped them to have healthier relationships. I mean, I just see that as sort of the setup for these destructive relationships. I feel guilty. I feel like I just didn't give them what they needed to have successful lives relationship-wise. Otherwise, they are all doing really well. For me, this conversation and this triad felt so good to be heard and to receive empathy. Really appreciate that.
In the next piece, we're going to talk about some of that guilt and some of how the way that things have unfolded in our country have kind of set parents up to feel the kind of guilt, so you may feel even more companionship. And I'm really so touched and pleased that you have felt safe to speak in your group and felt heard and were able to receive empathy and were able to receive that companionship that I think is so helpful for parents. Thank you. So there's no more comments. I would like to harvest the list of issues from the people who kept track of them so that we can all hear all the issues that came up.
The issues that came up in our small group included sadness, estrangement, I don't know what I call it, but violent communication or violence in communication or shockingly strong communication. And then helplessness, wanting to communicate without interfering and wanting to learn to parent in an adult way. So those are the things that came up in our group.
Okay, great.
The need that came up that were different was the need to set them free, the need to receive more expressed love, need to be authentic, and the need to set boundaries.
Thank you. I'm sure we are all resonating with all of these.
In our group, we also heard feeling unsure what to do, caught defenseless, sad and lonely.
Thank you.
There was a lot of missing of connecting, a need for connection, deeper connection. And another thing, I'm not sure that this was mentioned either, there was concern in cases for a child's well-being. A real concern about their well-being and how they're struggling.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a pretty complete list now of many, many of the issues that many parents of adult sons and daughters deal with. So what I want to do is move on, but first I want to tell you how touched I am. I feel very tender hearing of these issues and how hard it can be and how reassuring it can be to be with other people who really understand what it is that we're going through. So I'm switching gears now, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you some of the factors that you may or may not be aware of that have been taking place mostly in the 20th century and, of course, into the 21st century. And the reason that I do this is that I think it helps to bring some relief as well as a perspective and some understanding so that this sense of it's my fault is somewhat relieved. I've used several books on the history of families and the history of childhood in North America, and also a book that references some of this material called When Parents Hurt by Joshua Coleman, which is, I think, a really good book. And I use a lot of his material. The only thing missing, in my opinion, is NVC. So I run it through the NVC lens. It's easy to read, and I recommend it. And we're going to be doing some of the exercises that he recommends. So here we go. You'll be listening for a little bit. So there's certain strands of changes that happened in the beginning of the 20th century that have affected the family very profoundly. And radical changes in the boundaries between parents and children for several reasons. One is the shift from a rural and kind of agricultural way of life into an urban way of life. Another is the advent of psychology and other experts that came on the scene, Freud and other psychologists, and the change in the number of people in the country, and that it caused people to be living closer together indoors. There was fewer fields and empty spaces for kids to run around in. They were at home with their kids. Family models shifted from authoritarian to more democratic, and it created opportunities for more intimacy and friendship between parents and children, but it also left people kind of confused about who has the authority and where are the boundaries. So that's kind of the democratic climate in the family. There was the growth of media and the marketplace, and the advice of experts like Freud and later Watts and others that increased parental self-doubt, guilt, and worry. And also a view of children as fragile and in danger, and needing the parents, especially the mothers, care, special care. At the beginning of the century, when new household electrical refrigerators and washing machines and all this kind of stuff, there were so many accidents that by World War II, more children died of these household accidents than from anything else. And parents were held responsible. So the trend has been to increase the power of children in the home and to place children in a position to judge, reject, and shame their parents in ways unknown of before in the United States. And there has been a significant shift toward blaming parents for the problems of children. And especially in North America, North Americans bought into this idea more than other people. And of course, we have Freud, who was one of the most significant contributors to linking adult psychological problems to faulty parenting, you know, how they were potty trained and all that kind of thing, but also others, people like Bruno Bettelheim and Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson also held parents responsible for adult schizophrenia, autism, all these things that now are not seen as resulting just from faulty, quote-unquote, parenting. But even Dr. Spock, who came on in 1946 and who, fortunately, he spoke about the need to trust parents' instincts, to talk to, play with their infants and shower them with love, but he did not deflate the theory that children could be ruined beyond repair by small failures in parenting behavior. And this is new. This was not part of people's thinking before the 20th century. So another thing is parenting guilt. This came about from a lot of different things. One is that in the 20th century, because of birth control, parents could choose more to have smaller families, and did. And there was also parents choosing to enjoy sex without expecting to have a child as a result. But there was a lot of guilt associated with that. And then in the 50s and 60s, white middle-class mothers left the home to work and felt a lot of guilt about that. And there was the advent of parents, because they had this new self-doubt, they were worried that they weren't doing enough to take care of their children. And the idea of children's self-esteem arose, and that parents were responsible for the self-esteem of children. And so in the 50s and 60s, parents pressured schools, for example, to give everybody prizes, you know, instead of just one team or one child, and to do other things to protect children's self-esteem, because children were seen as kind of, again, fragile. And there was also the pressure to be successful in business and economically. And when children have not been so successful, and more recently, of course, with the economic downturn, there's more and more of children who are not able to measure up and get a great job that pays well. And parents are holding themselves a lot responsible for this. Another factor is the advent of the media, first radio and then television. And the media has had a field day with parental insecurity, putting out, do you know where your child is now? And, you know, the three biggest mistakes parents make, and so on. So today, more than any other parents have been, parents are worried and guilt-ridden. And there's been this major reversal in polarities. Prior generations of children were expected to earn their parents' love and respect. But today, parents are worried that they won't have their children's love and respect because they're not enough. Or, like many of us, they have evidence that their children do not respect them, which is also kind of unheard of. How could this be happening? Well, how could, we could never have been prepared for these kinds of changes. And the paradox is that while parents are encouraged to feel more and more responsible for their children, that they have to do more and more for them, these children are increasingly affected by influences outside of parents' control. So the media, and now currently the internet, but also the churches and schools and the marketplace. And there's been a new culture created where young people relate to their peers and share cultural references, language, and experiences that are foreign to the generation of parents. And this contributes to separation and alienation in the family. This is all kind of bad news in a way. And I haven't mentioned divorce, which is another way for children and parents to be separated and alienated from each other, although it doesn't always turn out that way. In my family, it was catastrophic, but not in all families. There are a lot of young people who can, and families who can flow with divorce without it being really a tragedy. That's the short version of some of the things that have happened. And I'd like to hear from you how this has been to listen to it. And I'd like to hear from some of you how you might have been affected by hearing some of the things I said.
What you said about in prior generations, the children were expected to earn their parents' love. And now, what I wrote down was, parents are really expected to earn their children's love. It really, I don't think you said exactly that, but it seemed like that was the meaning of what you were saying. And it's just so striking to me. I mean, it resonates.
Yeah.
That somehow,
yes,
the burden is on us to earn. And in this environment that you're describing, you didn't mention drugs, which happened to be important in my family, drug abuse. But with that and all of the rest of it, it is such a burden on parents, these expectations of all the things you were saying.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that's what happened for me in learning about this information, too. It makes sense. It's like, oh, yeah, but we come from another world. Yeah, thank you.
I think you said that, like, in the 50s and 60s, there was more emphasis like on increasing the children's self-esteem. Did you say that, 50s and 60s?
I did.
You know, my experience is different. I mean, I definitely grew up in the 60s, you know, went to school. And my parents, in a lot of ways, they had a lot easier job than I did because it was like they were the boss and we needed to earn their love. My experience is that it within the last 25 years, the self-esteem, it's like all of a sudden when my son was born, then it was like there was a much more emphasis on increasing their self-esteem, confidence. My parents were just like, you know, it's my way or the highway, and they didn't really think twice if we were upset. With my son, it was like much more like what you were saying. So just a question on the timing.
Yes, I would agree with you also. I'm probably older, but in my, nobody cared about my self-esteem. There was this idea that if you say something really nice to your kid, they're going to get a strange expression, a swelled head. Not even English, but yeah, thank you.
When you first posed the question, Celine, the first thing I did was to defend my guilt. It does make a difference. There were things I really believe if I had done differently, my children probably would be in a different place today. And then it occurred to me that at the same time, you know, I'm sort of the product of what you were just talking about, that I didn't have the model either, a solid parenting model that might have supported what I would term, I guess, more effective parenting. I guess I was just sort of sharing a process that I was, you know, first of all saying, wait a minute, no, I really did mess up. But then it was a little bit of a relief to say, well, yeah, at the same time, I'm part of this cultural system that you're talking about and the shifts and the changes and stuff. So I guess there was a little, I don't know if it was relief. And I just wanted to throw something in as I was hearing you talk also. I've heard several people talk about, like, in the 20s, and that would have been my parents' birth times, that it was sort of harsh with regard to, you know, you don't pick up a crying child. You know, there was a lot of expert advice that didn't allow parents to be affectionate with their children, that they thought they were doing their children a service by not responding to their expressions for comfort or whatever. Just throwing that out there is, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, there was a man, Dr. Watson, who was a behaviorist in the 20s, and he apparently had quite a bit of influence, and he taught that exactly what you said, there should be a minimum of expression of affection, of touch, and he claimed that with rewards and punishments, a parent could create whatever they wanted with a child, that the child came in as a blank slate, and so if your kid turned out bad, you know, if your kid turned out to be a thief or a drunk or whatever, it was your fault. And parents really believed this. I mean, the pressure, if you can imagine, of that kind of belief, that I think we still, to some extent, carry. But it wasn't until Dr. Spock in 1946, who came out as one of the experts and said, yes, hold your children, love them, and be affectionate, and so on. That's a lot of time in there for that kind of cold parenting and also the sense of pressure that I'm not doing enough for my kids, and if they're not turning out the way I think they're supposed to, it's because I've done something wrong. So thank you for bringing that up. I think that it was a huge influence.
What struck me as I was listening to these different statements, I could hear my father's voice throughout. In other words, he was making commentaries on all of these changes in our household as they kind of developed, I guess. He was expressing his dissatisfaction with it, and I don't know, maybe his, as I think now, maybe his self-consciousness about it and that it was change and that he didn't know how to deal with it or handle it or something to that. But I remember being struck by that, and also my memories of my mother who was reading all these writers like Freud and the other ones, and that she found them all really interesting and was trying to figure it all out. And then the third memory, kind of an amusing one, I learned to read very early. And my parents were using this book, I guess, by Dr. Gazelle. And I got hold of the book when I was 8, and I actually critiqued them on their parenting skills. So that was pretty precocious, I guess you could say. Probably didn't add to their confidence.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I think it was probably both a confusing and an exciting time because this new material, and a lot of it seemed to make sense, what Freud was saying. And now there's a lot of disagreement, for example, about exactly how much influence parents have. And as we're seeing, we're having less and less. But, for example, siblings affect each other tremendously, and there's really nothing that parents can do to control that. And peer groups, what children experience at school, for example, and what they experience now in social media and so on. There's only so much that parents can do or be blamed for. Any other questions or comments about this?
I won't go into all of it because it would take me the rest of the class, but just listening to what you told us and listening to all the comments, I realized that I grew up with two parents and three older sibs who were also surrogate parents. I had a lot of bosses as a little kid, and I have a feeling that I ultimately allowed my children to also be my bosses. And listening to this is just sort of this comprehension of what my life has been like has just sort of landed here. And I think, oh my, all these older experts, the feelings of guilt. I grew up Catholic, and so there's a lot of guilt been bestowed upon me, and I'm just beginning to get a handle on this.
Oh, thank you. I'm touched at what you're sharing and the sense of having spent so much of your life kind of letting somebody else's ideas and words and actions determine what you do or maybe how you felt and thought about things. Maybe wanting to connect with your own power in your life. What is it that you want?
Yeah, and I just gave it away all over the place. And I just from my learnings of NVC recently, and the concept of self-empathy has really affected me and allowed me to, in many ways, connect with my own power and realize that, you know, I have rights and I have rights to my feelings and my needs. And it's taking back that power. And I guess it's been happening over time, but I hadn't really understood the depth of that disempowerment until just now and realizing why I did all of that, why I gave my power away. I didn't know any better. I didn't think I had the right to my opinions or my choices. I mean, I have worked all my life. I've had responsible positions. I was able to do all that. I guess outside of the family, I have a better sense of myself and my value and my rights. I was inside the family where I had such confusion and such feeling like I did not have the right to respect, or I did not have the right to say no. And ultimately what I did with my kids was just when I divorced and life was really difficult, I just, you know, I couldn't resolve it. So I went and I did take care of my own life. But consequently, I lost connection with my kids. But now I'm beginning to get back, as one daughter has gone through very much similar relationship to mine. And she says, Mom, I know where you've been. Now I'm seeing the two others also going through difficulties, and one of them is gradually getting closer to me. So there's some resolution coming here, and the forgiveness of myself has been enormous through self-empathy, not feeling that it's my fault that I didn't, you know, that's what I did, that's what my life was, and I'm okay.
Thank you. So yes, for all of us, see the generational influences here. we were raised, how our parents were raised. And there may come a moment when our children have the same kind of reflection. And we may or may not benefit from it, but they will have that perspective too. And what I'm hearing also is that as you have this more understanding, you also can feel more compassion for yourself, for what you've done and what you haven't done, even if it didn't have the effects that you would have liked, that you can see yourself with more compassion and maybe more standing in your own light.
I like that.
So we have a little time. I thought we could bring up this question of guilt and do a little NBC with it for ourselves. This is really more dealing about with regret. And some people don't like the word regret. They think that it's putting yourself down, and I don't. I think that it's about learning, and there's a lot of usefulness in identifying the things that we wish we had done differently. I don't think guilt is quite as useful, so I like to talk about regret, and not the guilt seems to have some judgment in it. But let's just go ahead. This is a pretty classic NVC way of looking at guilt or regret. So this you'll do for yourselves internally. So the first thing is to recall something you've done or said, maybe to your kids, that invokes self-criticism, guilt, or shame. So just to bring everything up to the surface, what are you telling yourself about yourself in that moment? I'm stupid, I should know better, some kind of self-condemnation. And then maybe your mind comes this and tells you, justifies or defends what you did. Well, I didn't know better, or, you know, I was doing the best I could. Some self-justification, just to let all the voices come in. And so now, after you've done those steps, identify and connect with the needs that did not get met by the action that you decided. What needs did not get met? And give yourself some empathy. Here's a moment of some grieving. I really wanted such and such. I didn't get it. Mourning is a very important part of NVC process. There are the feelings associated with the unmet need. And then identify the needs that you were trying to meet with the action, and connect with those needs. I was trying to create connection. I was trying to contribute to the well-being of so-and-so. Give yourself empathy for this. And then think about, this is the learning. Is there something that you can think of that you can do in the future to meet both sets of needs in a similar situation? And finally, What can you do now to restore wholeness within yourself? About this situation where you initially felt regret for what you said or did. So what I'd like to do for the next period of time is have you go back into your small group and talk about this. Talk about this issue of regret and guilt and looking at the needs that you were trying to meet when you did or said whatever it was. And did you meet any needs? And how are you treating yourself with compassion and self-empathy? So I'd like you to please press 1 if you'd like more clarity about what I'm asking.
I was wondering, Celine, if you could amplify, what can I do now to restore wholeness in myself? Frankly, nothing comes to mind. What example do you have that might amplify that?
For example, let's see. Say I yelled at my son and I said something unkind, and I feel regret about that. So I look at that moment, and the need that I was trying to meet was to be heard. I wanted to be seen, I wanted to be understood, and I wanted to be heard. So I hold that with care and respect. There's nothing wrong with that. The need that I did not meet was a need for connection, a need for kindness, and maybe even a need for consideration. So I hold all of those needs together. And I have some compassion for myself, because I was wanting was to be understood and seen. And in the strategy that I use to be understood and seen, I missed an opportunity to meet needs for connection and kindness. And looking at both of those, I'm able to be a little more gentle and compassionate with myself. How does that sound to you?
Thank you. That makes it more clear. I appreciate the illustration.
Okay, thank you. So let's go in the small group to share on this topic of things that we've done that we feel some regret about, and that maybe we could use the word guilt, and bring compassion to ourselves by looking at the needs we were trying to meet and the needs that we did not meet. I'd love to hear if there's something you'd like to share about an insight you had, some surprise, some learning from this last exercise.
I really benefited from our breakout group. The examples they both gave were very meaningful to me as far as giving me further understanding on how to apply the whole process to myself. And both of them were very vulnerable and compassionate. So it was quite a meaningful experience. I appreciated it very much. Thank you.
I'm very happy to hear that. I think every time we practice connecting with ourselves in a compassionate way, it's a great advantage to us in how we react or respond to what is coming at us from our kids or anybody else. So it's a practice. You know, something we remember to say to ourselves, like, it's okay, or, oh dear, anything that would just bring us back to ourselves, a way we touch ourselves, breathing, remembering, feel our hands and our feet, anything like that. It brings us back to some kind of compassion and some kind of connection with ourselves. Anyone else want to share how that was for you?
Well, this is more a general comment for the whole session of today. I think the analogy that comes to my mind of how it's been for me is I'm remembering the little playground toy that was the twirl around thing with the this would spin and you'd all run along the outside of it and get it spinning and then hop on it and hold on for dear life, so centrifugal force didn't throw you out, and new kids would join and add to the spin, and it was wild and a scramble. And if you got dizzy and sick, you had two choices. You could let go and get tumbled, or you could go to the center. And in the center, it may not make a lot of sense what you were looking at, but you were at peace and still. And for me, this class today has been, that's the process, to hear just the different stories that are shared, as well as to hear the cultural context, helps me to remember, I have a choice about what part of this playground equipment I'm riding on at any given time. And I think I've been holding on to this peripheral place where the forces of gravity are very, very strong. And so all of my effort and energy gets focused on trying just to cope with those forces. And the process today brought me back to the center. I didn't have to let go and tumble out. It gave me a place and a community that allowed me to find my way back into center. And there I can sit at least in peace. And there's a sense of relief in that.
Thank you. I'm touched. I feel grateful to know that. And I love your metaphor. So meaningful, so rich. Thank you. Well, that's perfect for us right now as we come to a close for this class. And I'm going to ask you to next time bring a blank piece of paper and some colored pens or pencils. And we're going to do a little exercise where we kind of make a map of our families, or some of our families, some of our relationships. I'd like to briefly go around and say one need met today, and I will start community.
Shared reality.
Caring. Being cared about. Being heard.
Connection.
Empathy.
Meaning.
Keeping a commitment to myself.
Clarity.
Consideration.
Thank you. A lot of gratitude. Blessings to you.